the party isn't here, on SCR 28, in memoriam, James Lyle Osborne. Senator George, do you want to bring up... Ms. Chaudhry also. And Senator George, do you want to start off?
Let's let her go first.
Okay.
Now, I have to tell you that just a second ago, oh, for the record, State Senator Gary George, District 12, which includes McMinnville. I told my cousin here that she was very nervous about her first time to testify, even though you've seen her in the building doing a lot of good work. And I said, just reach down and grab that sitting blood that flows in our family, and you'll do fine. So with that...
The what blood?
Sitting. That was the last name, Sitting.
Oh. Well, good morning, proceed. Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tony Kodrick. I'm the corporate secretary for Oregon Mutual Insurance Company in McMinnville. And I'm very pleased that we have a chance to recognize James Osborne. He was someone I worked with for many years at my company, and I actually brought a picture this morning because it's always
good.
Nice to put a face
with
the information that you hear. Mr. Osborne was our president, our chairman of the board. He worked for the company for 47 years, and Oregon Mutual is an independent mutual insurance company, domestic to Oregon. 114 years old we are this year. And we're located in McMinnville. We write in 5 western states, and we write property and casualty. Jim Osborne was as fine a man as you would ever meet. He was a preacher's kid with this incredible knack for connecting to people. We called him a larger-than-life individual, and one of the things that we remember about him most was he instilled this commitment to the community. One of his favorite quotes was that all that we give into the lives of others, we bring back into our own. And he created opportunities for our staff, not just to show up, but to be in leadership positions in our industry, in our community, and actually in the state of Oregon, and in charity organizations throughout the state. In the national industry, he was on the board of directors of the National Association of Independent Insurers, which is now PCI, which you hear often because that's the company that Sean Miller represents, and we are a member of that company. Jim was on their national board. He was the chairman of the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies, which represents 1,200 companies in the United States, and he was the founder of an insurance education foundation, which taught high school instructors how to teach the principles of insurance, and they recognize an annual Teacher of the Year in his honor. He served the city of McMinnville in countless ways. He was on the school board. He was the chairman of the school board, the president of the Chamber of Commerce, the commissioner for water and light, and a trustee of Linfield College. He was recognized as Business Leader of the Year in 1987 and First Citizen in 1990. He was the chair of Associated Oregon Industries. He was on the board of the Independent College Foundation, and he was a board member for the Oregon Red Cross. We will remember his imposing and charismatic presence, his leadership, his contributions to Oregon Mutual, to his staff, to his community, and to the state. And we're honored to have this opportunity to give his family the recognition that he so well deserved. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? Well, thank you. And Senator George.
Just really quickly. Whenever you saw me smiling as the testimony was being presented, and one of the things that you will probably remember is last session, we had an opportunity to deal in the Revenue Committee with the idea of making sure that we were treating the few remaining Oregon-based insurance companies fairly. And that was a great bill that we moved out. And one of the things that you will remember is a decision was made by this company to stay in Oregon, not only to stay in Oregon, but to expand. And I can tell you that if you go to McMinnville, Oregon today, and you talk to anybody on the street, and you mention James Osborne, or you mention Oregon Mutual, you'll get the same smile that I gave you just a minute ago, because it is such a positive influence in the community. Not only the hundreds and hundreds of jobs that are directly connected, but also the citizenship that was demonstrated by that company and by its leadership. So I hope you're able to support this.
Well, thank you both for some very compelling testimony. And
thank you very much.
Good job.
Senator George, if you'd like to rejoin us up here.
Okay.
And I will close the public hearing, and I will open a work session on SCR 28. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would move SCR 28 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, it's been moved SCR 28 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments? Any objections? Seeing none, the resolution passes, unanimously with those people here. Senator George, you will carry.
Be my president.
Thank you very much. And we will now go on to the next item on the agenda. Colleagues, this particular item, and I'm changing committee administrators here, this particular item is relatively complex. It is an issue that I think a lot of people are interested in, but I wanted to ensure that the committee had a chance to hear from everyone, that the committee had a chance to formulate what issues they might think need to be addressed or whether they don't need to be addressed. So what I'm basically going to do today is, although it says public hearing and possible work session, the work session was intended for SCR 28. HB 3631 will only have a hearing today. And so I'm just going to try to get as many people on the record as possible with any support or concerns that they might have. And actually, I already opened a public hearing on House Bill 3631A. And so, if you would like to give us a brief overview.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, committee members. House Bill 3631A comes to you from the House Consumer Protection Committee, which it came out of the committee on a 7-0 vote and came out of the House with a vote of 34-24. The measure prohibits retailers from selling, offering for sale, or distributing certain children's products subject to a recall either issued by the Consumer Product Safety Commission or subject to a warning either by the product manufacturer or another federal or state agency. Children's products are defined in the measure as a product designed or intended for the care or of use by a child under 12 years of age or to come into contact with a child under 12 years of age at the time the product is used. Retailers are required to arrange to receive recall notices and warnings to dispose of children's products that are identified in a recall in strict compliance with the outlined disposal instructions that are included with the recall and to comply with all return, repair, retrofitting, or remediation instructions issued with the recall. Violations are considered as a violation under the State's Unfair Trade Practices Act. An operating date for certain provisions of the measure are established for May 1st, 2008, and there's an emergency clause on the measure effective upon passage.
Colleagues, we also have Representative Holvey here, who chaired the committee that this bill was considered in the House. And I'd ask Representative Holvey to come forward and to testify.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Devlin and committee members. Just wanted to come and speak to you briefly about this bill. It came to our attention earlier. There's been a lot of reports and a lot of talk around this bill. And though the chair has mentioned this is a complex bill, it really is a simple concept. And it frankly is just meant to be a shot across the bow as such for us to be able to be proactive at keeping dangerous children products off the shelves and out of the hands of children instead of waiting till after the fact trying to litigate this issue after someone's been harmed. And it seemed to us that it would be very appropriate for this to fall under the Unfair Trade Practices Act, a good way for it to be enforced. And you know, frankly, KJW, I believe it was, a TV station, brought this sort of to the attention of the public that recalled toys are still able to be on the shelves and actually sold to the consumer public. And it is not against the law for that to happen. And that, frankly, is alarming to the public and alarming to myself as well as Chair of Consumer Protection. We decided to take this issue up. We went through a lot of debate and discussion. We worked with the industry, listened to some of their concerns, changed some pieces of this bill, but we really felt it was important there. I know they still have concern with the private right of action in this bill. It was the opinion of our committee and the House side that it is good policy to retain that private right of action in the unlawful trade practices section of the bill. It seems that if the Attorney General is able to take action, they do not take action on every case that's available. And if a consumer is harmed, they ought to be able to take action under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act to remedy that their harm and their losses. So that is a part of the bill that I think you'll hear some debate about. But from our perspective, you know, we're adding children's products that have been recalled onto a long list of other things that are in Section 608 of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. I think that it's appropriate, and you know, some will say, well, they already have a tort action available to them, which is true. They do have that, but frankly, tort action has not kept these toys off the shelves. They're still sold. They still get in the hands of children, and we have testimony that you know, a lot of children are suffering from lead poisoning in this state, and there is an increasing amount of that happening. And frankly, under a tort action, it's real hard to go after the manufacturer when the manufacturer is in China and the distributor is in the Bahamas. And you know, it does become an issue. Our federal policy allows these toys into our marketplace, and for us to try to do something about it at the state level, it seems like we have to go into the area of addressing these toys being on the shelves in the first place.
So I have to welcome the Senate Republican leader.
From John Day, our very own legislative action figure. The toys bill here, you know.
Yeah. So though this bill is a toy bill, it is a serious issue. You know, the protection of our children in this state is a serious issue, and we think this bill will do take great strides in keeping the toys out of the hands of children to start with. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have specifically about the bill and try my best to answer it. I know that legislative counsel, I don't know if they're available today, but certainly DOJ is in the room as well.
Okay. Questions for Representative Holvey? Okay.
Mr. Chair, yes. Actually, I do. Representative Holvey, this is not an area I'm familiar with. What I hear you saying is that even though toys or products have been recalled, retailers still leave them on the shelves, and that we need to take, there's no federal statutes that require retailers from taking those off the shelves, correct?
Correct. The United States Consumer Product Safety Commission issues recalls. That recall program is a voluntary program, and they put out a list on the website, and the Department of Justice is in this going to be able to assist retailers in getting the information on these recalls, whether it's through the website, through an 800 number, or through the mail. We just feel that that retailers ought to know what products they're selling to the public. They ought to have some responsibility to know that the products they're selling aren't on this recall list, and that if they are on the recall list, they ought to be taken off the shelves so that they don't actually get in the hands of children, and then we have to deal with it after the fact.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Have there been any specific cases in Oregon where recall products, products that were recalled on the shelves and then caused injury? Are there any cases out there?
Well, we did. I don't have that information right now, but we did have testimony about some people who have been harmed, a person in Bend as well. And we know, you know, just from correlation, that a lot of times people don't really describe exactly what happened, but certainly there's instances of children, you know, strangling on toys, and you know, the instance of lead poisoning is quite an alarm. And we do have instances, you know, that, as I mentioned, that, you know, the TV station from Portland was able to go and buy recalled toys off the shelf and buy them quite easily at a lot of stores. Nationwide, there were statistics that over 56% of the recalled toys are still on the shelves. So, you know, this is an issue, and who's really responsible for that? Is it the retailer? Is it the manufacturer? Or, you know, clearly there's a lot of shared responsibility there, but, you know, I believe we're supposed to be protecting the consumer in the state of Oregon, and the way we do that's with the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. And if there is a violation, a retailer has to, you know, a consumer has to show that there is an ascertainable loss if they're going to take the private right of action. They also have to show that it was a willful act on behalf of the retailer to keep that toy and sell that toy on the product. So there are hurdles to get over. This is not something that's just, you know, an automatic and an unintentional mom-and-pop store is going to be sued. You know, I think that this bill is going to reduce litigation because we're going to be proactive at getting these things off the shelf in the first place.
Thank you.
Representative Hovey, this is often referred to as the toy bill. But if you read the bill, it has a couple of exclusions: medications, drugs, foods, and other products intended to be ingested. However, if you read the controlling language in the bill, it says that any product that comes in contact with the child under 12 years of age. That is quite a broad swath, actually, in a sense. If you look at the recall page for the Consumer Product Safety Commission, I spent about an hour and a half on it last night. My guess is that there are at least 30 categories there where something could come into contact with a child, something that you might not normally even suspect that would be listed, even though you wouldn't think such things would be recalled. I saw recalls for bookmarks, recalls that you obviously would have in place for any kind of lawn or garden equipment, recalls for, you can even get some recalls for athletic shoes. What was the discussion in the committee about this sort of broad swath when all the public discussion has been toys? And, I mean, even the news report has been toys. The swath here is actually extremely broad. And actually, I think some ATVs are being recalled, actually, too. I'll just
Well, you know, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you know, it is broad, but it's children's products that are designed and intended for the use by children. You know, so it's not as, you know, a car or even an ATV. Are they designed for use by children under 12 years old? You know, I think the Department of Justice could probably better answer this. But you know, in trying to define a toy or define a product that's intended to be used by children, whether we want to call it a toy or whether we want to call it a blanket or something that is specifically meant for another use for children, it's equally as important if it has been recalled and poses a danger to children. And this is about protecting Oregon's children. I think if a retailer's in the business, they ought to be aware of these products that are intended for use by children. The 12-year-old age is basically in line with the federal definition of what a children's product is as well, and so that's why we picked that age limit. Frankly, so it's very difficult to define what a toy is. Where do you draw the line? The important part is a children's product. It's intended for the use by the children, or if that they're in contact with it. And this was the way the Department of Justice and Legislative Council thought best to draw this line. It's pretty bright, and You know, whether it's broad, perhaps it's broad enough so it'll help protect more children, perhaps.
Yeah. Okay. Another follow-up question. Last week, I bought a little chalkboard set for a grandson. It was very cheap.
Don't admit that.
It was about $9. Now, if that product had been recalled, what were my damages?
You know, in a private cause of action?
Yes.
Well, I'm not sure, you know, by your definition, you have any damages. I'm not a lawyer or the Department of Justice, but you would have to show that you had an ascertainable loss, first of all, you know, that you were harmed in some way. And you would also have to show that the retailer, had a willful element to having that product on the shelf and selling it. So I'm not sure you have a loss,
yeah,
quite frankly.
Okay.
I mean, by your definition.
Yes. Representative Atkinson. Or Senator Atkinson. See, we go back a long way. okay.
I have a question, and I'll for you, and I know there's some other folks can testify, but let me just help me understand this. In my hometown of Jacksonville, I have the greatest toy store. It's called Shuffles Toys. It's on the corner of California and Old Stage. It's been there forever. And really fantastic toy store. In the back of the toy store, as it being a toy store, they have some toys in there that are behind the glass. They have these Civil War figurines. They have trains, all the different kinds of trains, Marklin trains, micro trains. And they have airplanes, lots of airplanes. And on occasion, my son's father will go in there and buy these toys and justify them to my son's mother that they're toys and that they're, you know, but they're collectible airplanes, and it pleases me greatly to collect them.
My son pleases your son to collect them.
But there's more fathers and grandfathers in this part of the toy store buying these expensive World War II airplanes and stuff like that. Here's my concern with the bill. My concern with the bill is that somebody could go in, buy something, anything, and have their lawyer go in and start suing on it, whether it was a figurine that some maybe choking hazard, I don't know. Or something. You said in your testimony that this is going to reduce lawsuits and that little retailers like Shuffles Toys aren't going to see more lawsuits. Help alleviate that fear for me.
Well, I said that I believe that this will reduce the amount of lawsuits because there will be less instances of these toys being on the shelves, you know, frankly. But the toys you're speaking about, you know, the collector's items, you know.
They have both.
Yeah, well, yeah, granted, but
kids' toys.
But I think in Department of Justice, we did discuss this, and they'll give you probably a clearer answer to that question than I could. But the collector's item that you're talking about, you know, if you're going in there buying it, you would have to question, is that a children's product that's intended for the use by a child? That's a question that would have to be, you know.
Well, that's what my wife says. But
well, you know, if they bring your wife on, you know.
No, but the let me correct one thing for the record. I said more lawsuits. And Shuffles Toys, to my knowledge, never been sued. Hopefully, never will be. But the fact is, they've got all these. I don't know about baby Einstein crib toys, but they've got all this. You know, toy store. It's a toy store.
Mm-hmm.
It's toys, kids, stuff. And then in the back, they've got all the cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm worried about.
Well, it is that cool stuff, you know, first on the recalled list, you know. I mean, you got a couple of elements you have to get through. And, you know, and is it a children's product? You know, if it's a collector's item for collecting, I would argue that it probably is not a children's product.
But the burden of proof falls on the retailer if somebody decides to sue them. Now the retailer, who wasn't exposed to liability, has got to defend themselves. That's the part that has me concerned.
Well, I would argue that I don't think that's correct, that the burden of proof is on the retailer. We took the rebuttable presumption of constructive and actual knowledge out of this bill to make sure that the burden of proof was on the consumer in proving an action. So, you know, again, I am not a lawyer, and I may be incorrect about that. And Department of Justice and other lawyers may be better able to answer that question. But from what our discussion was, that burden of proof is not on the retailer to prove; it's on the consumer to prove that they've, you know, had an ascertainable loss and that. There's some willingness on the part of the retailer to make this children's product available when they knew that it shouldn't be.
Are you concluded, Senator Atkinson? Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Holby, thank you very much for bringing the bill. But I have a couple questions about the mechanisms. First of all, through the chair, are all toys that represent a threat to children eventually listed on a recall list?
Are all toys what?
Are all toys that represent a threat to children, a hazard, a choking hazard, a paint hazard, whatever, listed on the recall list?
I don't know that for sure, but I would probably say no. You know, because the recall list is a voluntary program.
So
at the federal level.
I have to conclude from that only the toys that are on the recall list fall under this statute.
Well, I don't think that's entirely correct either. There is a provision in this bill that also includes bills that have had the manufacturer issue warnings. Sometimes the manufacturer may issue a warning about a product that should be taken off the shelf as well. And if the retailer gets that as well, it may not be on the recall list. And I think there's also a provision in here for toys that are on the DHS list of being a banned product for having hazardous materials in it, which may or may not be on the recall list as well. There is a couple other ways to get to toys in this that fall under this bill. That's for sure. And the Department of Justice is going, will assist the retailers in making sure they have that information available to them, that they are, receiving the notices, they are receiving the warnings. You know, if the manufacturer issues a warning in the first place, if they don't, I guess that's, outside of this bill as well. So, the issue is we're trying to make an attempt at getting mostly these products that have been recalled, that are still being sold on the shelves, that are still getting into the hands of children, to get them off the shelves and get them out of the hands of children first, instead of waiting until somebody dies, somebody gets hurt, and then having a tort action and litigation in that case, which is a much more severe scenario, I think, than what we're looking at in this bill.
Representative Holby, I understand the objective. I just want to understand more about the mechanism. As I understand it, it could be an alert sent out by the manufacturer or the distributor or the importer or the Department of Justice or the Consumer Product Safety Commission, or any one of the consumer groups that have an interest in product safety. And as I understand this bill, the Oregon Department of Justice is going to coordinate all that information and make sure that gets to retailers.
Well, that's not a correct statement either. The consumer safety groups can't issue something, and that's not in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, they routinely send consumer warnings to folks. They just
Consumer groups do, but that's not part of this bill. The products they issue warnings are not part of this bill. This is from the manufacturer, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, or another federal or agency or a state agency, frankly.
Okay.
So a consumer advocacy group, for instance, that issues a warning wouldn't fall under this bill. It's not in the bill.
Okay. Well, I guess what I was getting at there, Representative, is that there's a lot of lists out there, and it does require some coordination by a state agency. Is there any cost to this?
There was a minimal fiscal and impact on this bill. Department of Justice can probably better explain, you know, how that fits into their scenario. They are not out there at every corner in every store, you know, monitoring this. That's not how the Department of Justice works. They're also, you know, I might add, from testimony, you know, they're not. They look for egregious cases that address a wide range of people. So they're not taking up every case that may be out there or every consumer complaint that happens to come in. They may or may not take action on that, and that's why it's important to have that private cause of action in this bill, so that if in fact there is a consumer out there with an ascertainable loss and, you know, can jump the hurdles of showing that the retailer, you know, acted willfully in having a toy on the shelf and selling it, that they have a remedy under this, under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. So, you know, I'll risk with that.
The committee administrator wanted to provide a little bit more clarification.
Yes, and I also want to put, thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, especially Vice Chair Farrelly. Section 3 of the bill also allows the attorney, it requires the Attorney General's office to include on their website direct links to websites such as the Consumer Product Safety Commission, their website. But they can also have, there's also permissive language to expand upon that if they so choose to provide consumers and retailers with additional recall information.
Mr. Chairman, the point is that I guess I can't imagine this notification process, even if it's just daily updating or twice daily updating of a website, not requiring at least a single FTE. It seems to me that there's an awful lot of organizations and retailers that engage in selling toys. And, Mr. Chairman, I can't imagine a toy retailer that specializes in toys wanting to have their shop associated with selling products that are not safe. So, and I think that is at the heart of why at the federal level these are voluntary compliances, is that, you know, KB or whatever the toy retailer is that makes its reputation, Toys R Us, certainly doesn't want to have consumer product notifications going out that alerts parents and grandparents and others who buy toys for children that this toy emporium specializes in harming children. I would think that they do anything they possibly could to avoid having that label. On the other end of that spectrum, a lot of variety stores, even grocery stores, have a section of toys. And the idea, I think the idea of the cause of action is one that makes me curious. What is an ascertainable loss under this bill? If I go ahead and spend $50 on a flying model airplane, you know, I know the little helicopter control, radio controlled helicopters were a big deal this session or this holiday season. A lot of them are painted in very, very brightly colors. It wouldn't surprise me to find that some of them at least have lead-based paint. Yeah. So, you know, if you paid $50 for one of these things and you took it back to the retailer and they said, well, we no longer carry that model and, you know, what's wrong with the toy? And gee, it showed up on a consumer list and you couldn't get satisfaction at the retailer level. Would you have a cause of action there?
Well, I think you're going to have to ask a lawyer on that, and a judge ultimately makes that decision. You know, so I think I'm the wrong person to ask or to answer your specific question, exactly what is an ascertainable loss. I think a judge is going to make a decision at some point whether he define, you know, and maybe that's already established. You know, the Department of Justice would probably be a better answer to that question. I know they'll be up here to testify as well. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, if we can't determine or don't know what an ascertainable loss is, I don't know how you would ever claim to be protecting the
consumer. I'll get a little bit of interaction here.
Yeah. We have a couple of attorneys on the desk.
Let's see if we get competing opinions.
Well,
Mr. Chair, I just want to go...
Do we have two attorneys? But I'm not going to tell you what an ascertainable loss is. I just want to clarify for the record is Section 2. I mean, Senator Ferriola, you're concerned that any consumer group can issue a warning about a product. And under Section 2, as I read that, there are three circumstances under which the bill applies. And I just wanted the committee administrator to clarify that that is, in fact, the case, that it's not any group. It's under three circumstances that this bill would apply.
That is correct, Senator Brown. And also to point out the Subsection 3 with DHS, they currently have that statutory authority already in place. This just clarifies that they continue to have that authority.
Okay.
So it doesn't create any new authority.
No.
And I guess my point was, you know, I asked a question of Representative Holvey earlier if all of the stuff that's hazardous to kids ultimately ends up on one of those three lists, and the answer is no.
That's right.
Yeah. The other question, Mr. Chairman, and I'll try to get closer to the issues here.
I should say, please ask the question. I'll go to a lock-in, but I've got to get Holvey back to the floor because I think his leader and the speaker probably need him there. But go ahead.
I understand that the retailers of Oregon through various organizations have approached you on the bill and asked for some changes to be made. And it would seem to me that to make this truly effective, you have to have Oregon's retailers fully on board with it. What efforts were made to accommodate the changes that they've asked for?
Well, there, you know, I did delete a section out of the original bill at their request and had negotiations with them, talked to AOI and NFIB about their concerns, and their main concern was with the bill. I did address their other concern is right at the private right of action and in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, and frankly, you know, we decided the policy was best to leave it in that section of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act so that consumers have a remedy, under this bill, and it's adding these children products that have been recalled to a long list of other items that are already in that section of law. So, you know, that's the policy decision before you that we could not agree upon with the retailers. We feel that the consumers have a right to be able to seek a remedy under this statute if this bill is passed, and to take that away makes it and it's not an easy thing for them to even proceed under that act in the first place, and to take that out really leaves the consumer without a lot of recourse if, in fact, they do become harmed in one of these situations. And I'm sure you'll hear other testimony back and forth on that particular item from others who are practice inside this arena more than I do. So, you know, I am not your lawyer that takes these cases to court or a judge that oversees these or the Department of Justice who is involved with the Unlawful Trade Practices Act to start with. So your answers to those sorts of questions would be better answered from those folks, and you can make your decision on that policy as you see fit, as I know you will.
And, Mr. Chair, is... Was there any discussion at all of giving the retailers a period of time, however short, to make that notice more than just constructive notice? Or is it a matter of the second it appears on the website or is in a published form on the recall list, we're assuming that the retailer is knowledgeable and therefore is under an instant requirement to pull all that inventory and refuse to sell the product.
No, I think it sounds like you're looking at the first version of the bill that where Section 4 has that in there. And that section was taken out, you know, to that presumption of constructive knowledge because it's on the shelf is not in the bill anymore. That was part of the we listened to the retailers on that particular issue and removed that from the bill.
Yeah, and Chairman, I offer that as proof that I actually read the bills before I get to Mr. Chairman, before I get to the committee. Thank you very much for your answers, Representative Holden.
Thank you, Representative Holden. You have to carry a bill on the floor. Can I get a quick question from Senator Vaucken, and then we'll get you.
I have a question.
Thank you very much, Representative Holden, for coming here today. I'll keep you abreast of when the next hearing is on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and I'd be more than willing to engage in this conversation further and see if the committee wishes, you know, to make any amendments to the bill. I'd be more than willing to listen to those proposals and do what I can to facilitate passing the bill. I urge you to move this bill on for the sake of Oregon's children. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to go to I'm going to move the testimony back and forth so that we're not all in one perspective. So I'm going to bring up Harlan Levy, Betsy Earls, and Sean Miller. And then I will go to either Kevin Neely or Kristen Leonard, whoever is going to be here, and then on to the Department of Justice.
You can probably pull DOJ and OIA up at the same time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am Harlan Levy, here representing the National Federation of Independent Business. We are the nation's leading advocacy group for small businesses with approximately 7,500 members here in Oregon. Here today to express our concerns about House Bill 3631 as before you today. We share Representative Holvey's concern about making sure that these products do not end up in the hands of children, and we want them off the shelves. However, we believe this bill goes too far. We do support the intention of this bill in that it would allow the Department of Justice to go out and enforce the federal recall list. So those sections of the bill we do support. It is the private cause of action in this bill that we are very concerned about. What this bill would do is it would add this practice, having one of these items on a store shelf, quote, offering it for sale, to the list of things that are contained in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. Where this differs...
Can I interrupt you for a second? I'm going to indulge something if there's no objections on the committee. I think they're doing this for probably a magazine, but they would like to take a couple of photos, if that's okay, with the committee. So please testify. Okay.
I'm so relieved.
Please proceed.
I object then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Where this bill differs from the existing Unlawful Trade Practices Act is you would be taking a practice that is not willful, where somebody has an item on the shelf and then it may become subject to a recall, and now adding that to the list of items that are already under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, which is reserved for willful conduct. If you read the Act and you go through all the things that the legislature has seen fit to put in that, those are situations where you have one person committing fraud against another person. They are intentional acts. And the reason that the legislature has codified the Unlawful Trade Practices Act is because fraud under the common law was difficult to prove. So the legislature saw fit to create a statute that basically codified common law fraud as well as adds attorney's fees and the potential for punitive damages. So what could happen if this bill passes in the current form is you would be adding this unintentional conduct to the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, which would give people the right to sue retailers that make an honest mistake.
That's somebody's doing work downstairs, so it's...
So that honest mistake, unlike the other items listed in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, could lead to not only liability, but also punitive damages and attorney's fees. That is our biggest concern. So we would ask that, you know, if the committee sees fit to move this bill, that you would amend it to remove that cause of action. And we do have amendments, the A7 amendments, which would go ahead and do that.
No, you can pass the notes.
No,
well, they have
My members are, you know, somewhat different from some of the other associations you may hear from today, in that my members are mostly little mom-and-pa retail stores. One lawsuit could put these people out of business. Whether they win, lose, or draw, just the fact of having to defend themselves in one of the lawsuits that could be triggered by this bill could be enough to set these people over the edge. I mean, they don't operate on a very large margin to begin with. And this bill could put them out of business for making nothing more than an honest mistake and not getting that item off of the shelf in enough time before they got sued. With that, I will conclude my testimony and be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. We'll do the entire panel, and then we'll go to questions.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sean Miller here today on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association. Our membership is over 200 member companies doing business in the state of Oregon with about 800 retail locations. Our membership encompasses the large chain grocery stores as well on down to your smaller independent markets and some of your smaller communities. We're here in opposition to House Bill 3631 as drafted. And Harlan indicated, we are not opposed to the intent of the bill, which is to get these toys off the retail shelves and go after folks that are willfully selling recall toys. Our retailers take this issue very seriously. When there is a recall toy, they get it off the shelves as soon as possible. They do not want to sell that toy, and they follow the recall instructions down to a T. One of the problems when you look at the bigger chains who may have compliance officers, down to the independent stores who may just have the store owner who is required to check the internet. Are they required to check the internet 3-4 times a day, 5 times a day? If the recall notice is issued at 8 o'clock in the morning, are they then subject because they're offered to sell for an hour and it was on the shelf and they didn't know it was on the shelf, making an honest mistake? As Harlan indicated, you know, they're not willfully selling that item. We as retailers rely on our manufacturers. And as you heard before, if there is a problem with a defective toy that is recalled, there is a tort action against that manufacturer. This bill and what Harlan indicated to the -A7 amendments, which have been passed out, gives that authority to the Attorney General's office to go after those folks who are willfully selling these toys. When we pull them off the shelves and somehow they may get into the wrong hands, this bill does nothing to go after people who may privately sell these items, for instance, on eBay. Again, when something is recalled, you're going to see a stream out there, whether it's at a flea market, eBay, those kind of venues. And, you know, we want to be able to stop that, because if it is recalled, it shouldn't be getting into the hands of kids. Testimony on the House side, I want to go back, because this bill was introduced, obviously, on the first day of session. Hearing the second day of session, it moved the third day of session. I could say, from our standpoint, the retail community, there wasn't really negotiations involved in trying to work out the details of this bill. We did outline our concerns, as Representative Holvey indicated. We had problems with the presumption language and the private right of action language. I think the private right of action language being a very problematic to the retail community. There was testimony on the House side when the Attorney General's office testified that we would be the first and the only state to have a private right of action on these items. And so most of the other states, and you'll probably hear from their research, unless they've found something different than on the House testimony, indicates that most states have their state attorney general or some administrative function to go after people who willfully sell these products. We support that. the private right of action, obviously something that we believe goes too far. I think I just want to, just in conclusion, answer a question that Senator Devlin asked in the beginning. When you look at Section 1 of the bill for the care and use by a child under 12 years of age, when you go in a grocery store, and again, most of our grocery stores will sell some form of toys, and if you've been in a Fred Meyer, they do have toy sections in the bill and in their stores. However, you go into the children's or kids section of the store where you have diapers, baby powder, shampoo, you name it. There is a number of those kinds of items. Those are also inclusive in this bill under this definition. And so, again, you know, it is called the toy bill. There could be many other items that would fall under those circumstances. Another point that I just quickly like to make is the inclusion of intended for a child under 12 years of age. Senator Atkinson talked about a toy, maybe an old figurine or something. Again, proving that it's intended for under 12 or not, that's something that has to be done in court, and then we would have to defend that. So essentially, again, getting back to this willfulness of selling a product that's been recalled, we're fearful of it. This bill creates unnecessary litigation where we'll have to defend ourselves, and then proving that ascertainable loss is simply driving to the store. You had to buy gas to get to the store to buy that product. That could be argued that that's an ascertainable loss, and therefore we would be subject to defending ourselves. And so, again, we are support of the concept of this bill, Mr. Chair. I don't want to, you know, our retailers want to do the right thing, and we're not ever intending to sell these products. But on the House side, there wasn't data or no testimony given of any harm in the state of Oregon, even though there was some news stories. There was no testimony indicating that, and there was also no testimony giving Oregon-specific data of particular problems in Oregon, especially with the retail community. I want to point out this bill only targets the retail community. Again, we rely on our manufacturers for these products. And so, again, we would be supportive of the A7 amendments, and I'll conclude my testimony at that time. Thank you.
Ms. Earls.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Betsy Earls, representing the AOI Retail Council. AOI, as the other two organizations indicated, supports the intent of House Bill 3631, which places the sale of recalled toys under the Unfair Trade Practices Act in Oregon. The Unfair Trade Practices Act, we think, is a reasonably good place to put such a law because it provides such an excellent administrative process through the Attorney General's office to work with retailers back and forth about toys that are recalled. However, when you place something into the Unfair Trade Practices Act, along with that comes the private right of action, which we think is inappropriate in situations such as this. In the wake of the multiple recalls we saw over the Christmas holidays, retailers have really been increasing their efforts to remove those toys from their shelves. And as this bill is written, the Attorney General is also to increase their outreach efforts to retailers to help inform them of recalled toys. And AOI and its Retail Council look forward to working with the AG's office to create and improve a partnership to help them improve that outreach. However, retailers knowing that a toy has been recalled or not knowing is still the biggest issue and problem that we have with the bill related to the private right of action. As Sean mentioned, it's difficult to know if somebody should check the internet once, twice, three times a day. We have many, many small retailers that don't have internet access and instead get mailings, which may come a day or two after a toy has been recalled, if then. Allowing a private right of action in a situation like this sets retailers, even conscientious retailers, up to have to defend themselves in court, which is very costly. Even if a retailer wins the very first round of motions in a private right of action such as this one, they still have had to go to court. That costs a fair amount of money, and I realize that under this Unfair Trade Practices Act, attorney's fees go to the winner of a action. There's more to the cost of such a situation than just the attorney's fees that you spend. Many people are very small retailers. It takes time. It takes stress. These are good people trying to do the right thing with their businesses. And if you put them in a situation where they could potentially have a private right of action brought against them, you're just making it harder for them to do the right thing.
Okay. Questions? Senator Brown.
Thank you. A couple questions. Can you help me feel some comfort? Without the passage of the bill, do these toys and products, do they get off the shelves? Is there any impetus for these products getting off the shelves without the bill?
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, I would say to you that toy retailers and retailers are trying to do the right thing, and they have made a pretty big effort to increase their removal of toys and patrolling of their stores since what happened over the Christmas break. But no, I don't believe it's against the law.
Okay.
At this point.
Yes.
Talk to me about private right of action and whether or not, I guess my concern is, does the Department of Justice have adequate resources to enforce the bill without the private right of action?
Chair Devlin, Senator Brown, you'd have to ask the Department of Justice how much money they have to do this, but they are enforcing certain aspects of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act today. So what you'd be doing is adding another thing for them to enforce. With that said, I think that they would, and the reason that we are not as concerned with having the authority vested in them is they would only go after the big violators. You know, they have limited resources, so they would go after the ones that are really flaunting the law, which is good. We want those people put out of business. They're breaking the law. They're making us all look bad. Our biggest concern is that with the private cause of action, that distinction goes away. And, you know, any retailer that breaks the law, whether they do it one time or whether they do it 100 times, and whether the one time they do it is unintentional, they are now potentially liable and are going to have to defend themselves in court.
Mr. Chair, one last follow-up.
Yes.
Even if we don't pass this bill, aren't your retailers potentially liable anyway? Let's say there's a recall out on whatever it is, Cinderella doll. Mom takes her kid to the store, buys Cinderella doll, which is under recall. Kid eats Cinderella doll, dies. I'm assuming your retailer is still subject to liability under those circumstances anyway, right?
Chair Devlin, Senator Brown, that is correct. They would still be subject to products liability and regular tort law.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Senator Lockhand.
Mr. Chair, a few questions just following up that line. What I'm missing in the discussion about this private right of action is they could sue under tort law or products liability law now without this bill. What increased burden is presented by this bill that worries you since you faced the threat of lawsuit anyway?
Chair Devlin, Senator Avakian, this bill opens it up to any product that is sitting on the shelf. If it ends up on a recall list and that product is not immediately removed from the shelf, this bill creates liability. And offering for sale is the key here. When you have a product that causes harm, then you're subject to common law tort liability. Here there has to be no harm shown. Just offering it for sale triggers the potential liability under this bill. So the amount of liability that gets created here increases very, very significantly for every one of our clients.
All right, let me just keep going with that for a minute, because this is a very important part of the amendments. It would be your interpretation that even if somebody is not physically harmed, they would still have the private right of action just because the sale was proposed.
Chair Devlin, Senator Avakian, the way I read the bill, that is true. The statute does require that there be ascertainable loss of money or property, but then it goes on to say that they are going to the legislature assumes that that amount can be de minimis because it says it's either going to be the actual loss or $200, whichever is greater, which tells me if it's $6 worth of gas to drive to the store or the $8 you paid for the toy that you bought, that is going to be enough to trigger the jurisdictional standard of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, and that'll get them into court.
Well, just for our further discussions outside of this hearing, that piece is not persuasive to me, but it's an important piece of this, and so I think I'm going to want more information about why you would think that kind of an insignificant loss would support a lawsuit. The other question I wanted to ask you is, which is another piece that's important to me, is two of you have made comments about this potentially putting mom and pop shops out of business. Now, I think most of the time that a large retailer is sued, insurance covers the cost of their litigation fees, and so you don't have, there's an indirect harm, of course, with insurance rates, but you don't have that direct out-of-pocket cost on attorney's fees. Is that not true with smaller shops that might be subject to lawsuits?
Chair Devlin, Senator Vaca, no. They do have insurance, but the cost of that insurance is going to go up. I mean, once they get sued, they're going to be reevaluated, and the next time it's time to renew, they're going to be, paying a higher premium for that insurance. And then the question is, how far does the insurance cover them? What policies do they have? I mean, how much... The liability that is created here is going to raise the cost of doing business significantly, and that's our biggest concern, is that this is going to result in some of them closing up their shops because they cannot meet the additional costs created here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Harlan, Mr. Wiley. It's been pointed out to me that there is a product listed under the section of the Unfair Trade Practices Act that could result in a private right of action. That product actually is mercury thermometers. Can you differentiate between that and this from the standpoint that is an explicit declaration in law, and that in a sense, it would almost have to be willful to use it because it's not a broad... I'm almost answering my own question, but it has been pointing out to me that why can't we do this because this one item is in state law and you have a private right of action.
Chair Devlin, that is correct. You have mercury listed there, offering mercury, I believe it's thermometers or other products.
Thermometers, yes.
But that's listed in statute. I mean, any retailer that, is doing that, despite the fact that it's listed in statute, it's for the whole world to see. That is, maybe they should be put out of business because that says don't do it. What this bill purports to do is to create a list that's never in statute, is a list that is always changing, is a list that could say one thing at 8 a.m. and say something different at 9 a.m. That is the problem, is the liability trap that you're creating here is huge. Whereas when you list the actual item that the legislature has decreed shall not be sold, that is different, and the way that you prevent that is a lot easier. Your risk management and your compliance to prevent that is much easier than a list that could be anything that another agency puts on the list at any time in the future.
Any additional questions at this time? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
I'm going to move now to stand whoever the one's going to be. Mr. Neely. Okay. Why don't you come up also? Kevin, I'm going to go to you first, and then I'm going to leave the representative from DOJ up here to answer questions.
Thanks. That sounds great, as you can imagine. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Neely, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. The Oregon Trial Lawyers Association supports House Bill 3631 as it's written. We do not support the -A7 amendments. We believe it's a good bill that will increase consumer safety. There's been obviously a lot of discussion today about the private cause of action and a lot of talk about enforceability. And I think one of the reasons that I'm here today to testify in front of you is that I happened to be at the Department of Justice when all the funding got taken away from the Consumer Protection Unit. And I think what the private cause of action in this bill does is it affords consumers an outlet in the instances in which the Department of Justice does not have the resources to pursue things. Unfortunately, as I said, about 6 years ago, this assembly elected to essentially put them on a menu of you get to go after the big cases and you get to try and recover the money, and that's how you're going to sustain the unit. And unfortunately, for some of those organizations that aren't the big cases, they don't have to worry too much about the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, except if there is a threat of private civil litigation. And so what this bill does, obviously, is ensure that for those folks that are willfully violating the law, and they aren't a big enough dog, so to speak, to draw the ire of the Department of Justice, there's some other avenue for consumers to come in and hopefully get some relief. Again, I don't think this bill is intended to go after the ma and pa shops that are trying to do everything right. Unfortunately, this bill is intended to go after those shops that are doing things incorrectly, that are violating the law and that are putting people in danger. And hopefully, preserving that private right of action will allow consumers who have been victimized to have an avenue of recourse in the instance in which the Attorney General and the Department of Justice are either unable to or decide not to, for resource concerns, pursue the case. So with that, I would either turn it over to Mr. Scholl or be happy to answer any questions, whatever order you prefer.
Okay. Mr. Neely, I'll start off with questions. Hate to put you in this position.
I don't mind.
I've got kind of a long history with these issues. In approximately about 1973, I served as an intern to the Department of Justice in the Consumer Protection Division. At that time, we only proceeded, or the staff that I worked with, and I was way down at the bottom of the staff, only proceeded on those cases where there was a consistent pattern of misconduct, so to speak. And I understand what happened in terms of general fund for consumer protection. I didn't actually think that that was a very good thing to happen, and tried to restore it in the session after that. And unfortunately, what it's become now basically is that they can do as much as they get in terms of settlements. That's basically how the Department of Justice is structured now in terms of consumer protection. I mean, whatever you can get in settlements actually funds your consumer protection. Sometimes that's pretty sizable, but it's not really a consistent type of revenue. But I think it's also kind of a ruse to say that we've somehow replaced that because you have a private right of action, just simply because you could. Because if you had a child that had been injured, product liability, I think that you would have lots of attorneys that would be very interested. If I come in and say, I bought a toy and it cost me $19.29 and it was recalled and I want to return it, and the retailer won't take it back, which many retailers I think would take it back, I don't think there's an attorney in this state that would take the case. So I just want to put that on the record, because I think Senator Schrader and I share a couple of things, and I hate to bring up his name here, but we hate bills that are drawn, that are written to have no fiscals, that are purposely put forward as if you can do something and it doesn't cost anything. And I think that this would be much more effective if it was in the Department of Justice, they had the enforcement authority, and they actually had the resources to enforce it. But I think it's a complete ruse to say that a private right of action, unless there's a product liability issue, which would be covered obviously under other areas of law, is somehow enabling a citizen, a consumer, to be able to have redress. I just wanted to put that on the record. So if you want to rebut that statement, you're fine.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure it's prudent to do that, but I would say one thing. I would say one thing, and I'm not sure that this is a rebuttal. I think it's more just a statement. I think one of the reasons that this law is
very diplomatic.
I think that one of the reasons that this law is being proposed is to help ensure that retailers proactively take items off the shelf that have been recalled. And one of the ways to make sure that that happens is that retailers know that there is some potential risk if they don't. So again, I think that's one of the things that this bill does, and I suspect that there already is risk there, but this obviously makes it crystal clear.
Okay. Senator Vaughan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I stepped out. If you covered this ground while I was out, just cut me off and we'll move on. But there's two reasons for some type of action being taken. One is to deter businesses from doing bad things, or from that particular one from continuing to do bad things, meaning not getting it off the shelf. The Department of Justice's role fulfills that, in my mind. The private right of action or a negligence suit, I think, primarily exists not to deter, but to fulfill somebody who's been damaged, to make them whole in some respect. Now, what I don't understand is, since you already have that ability to do that in a negligence or a products liability claim, what does this give the family of an injured or killed child in damages that they can't get in another way under existing law?
Mr. Chair, Senator Vaughan, I'm not sure that I can answer that question effectively, because I don't know the answer if it gives them a whole bunch of additional redress. But I think the word that I was trying to get out of my mouth when Senator Devlin spoke of his concerns was deterrence, and I think you hit it on the head. I agree that, as you said, the Department of Justice does carry a rather a big stick sometimes in terms of deterrence, but I think we heard in the previous testimony, that everybody out there knows that the Department of Justice reserves that big stick for the big violators. Those are the folks they go after. I was there for a significant period of time, and I watched the kind of cases that we had there, and Mr. Scholl, I'm sure, will talk about the types of cases that they pursue. But again, I think if everybody out there knows that the Department of Justice only goes after those folks who are the worst violators, I'm not sure what deterrent effect this has for folks that are not the worst violators, for folks that are just violating because they know they can get away with it. So again, that would be the... I think that you're right. This is about deterrence in many instances.
Are you concluding? Senator Farrell.
I appreciate Senator Avakian's question. That really does speak to the concern that I heard from the previous panel, which is this is aimed at the mom and pop. You know, if we're not going after the big guy, because we already have that tool in place, this is the little retailer that is in the crosshairs on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any additional questions? Senator.
Well, go on, Senator Atkinson. I'm sure he has something pithy to say.
Nothing pithy at this moment.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Neely. It's good to see you with another client.
Tough room.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question for Mr. Neely, and I'm still kind of struggling with how to ask it. But basically, I mean, to kind of address the Senator Farrelly, if, and actually Senator Avakian's question about if families who are harmed have alternative ways of remedying that harm through tort action. Why is the private right of, you talked about deterrence, but in terms of the impact on the small stores, and, you know, I think Sean said, you know, does this require one-hour checking? Is there a standard out there that we can feel comfortable with that this wouldn't be used for, is lack of a better word, harassment or, you know, lawsuit harassment or, you know, out there 1 hour, somebody's going to be the store police, the toy store police, checking, you know, the little moms and pops. You know, how do we know that doesn't happen?
Senator Devlin, Senator Brown, I'm not sure that we know that doesn't happen. Again, I don't think that this is intended to go after folks who are doing their best to keep those products off the shelf. It's intended for those folks who are not doing what they need to do. As the owner of small businesses, they have, I'm sure, especially if they're selling something to children, a responsibility to make sure that they're doing all they can to try and keep those harmful products off the shelf. I don't think this bill is intended to go after those folks who are doing all they can to keep those products off the shelf. Rather, I think this is intended to go after those folks who are not doing what they can or what they should be doing to keep those products off the shelf. And that could be a big box retailer or it could be a local shop.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, I think my question is actually for the Department of Justice, and that is essentially is providing a private right of action. Is that a strict liability? What's the standard there? Is it strict liability standard if the law is not complied with?
So Senator Brown, can I relieve? Yes. Can yes. I relieve Mr. Neely?
Sure, yes, yes.
Thank you. And Chair Devlin, members of the committee, thank you very much. Andrew Scholl, Oregon Department of Justice, Financial Fraud, Consumer Protection Section. Really quick, if I can, having been born in Montana, I would like to thank Senator Farioli for his hat this morning.
The Montana hat would be bigger.
Texas hat would be bigger than that. So. Please proceed.
He knows. Thank you.
That's good.
Chair Devlin, Senator Brown, really quick to answer your question, as is evident in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, when you compare ORS 646607, which does not contain a private right of action, and ORS 646608, which does contain the private right of action, as a general rule, if the legislature has made a policy choice to place something under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, because of all the various reasons mentioned and discussed today, we feel that it's appropriate for that tool to also be provided to the individual who may not have any redress through the state of Oregon, whether it's the Department of Justice or otherwise, even if there are other avenues that they may be able to take, because they are different avenues. An example I might touch base on, and this may help answer some questions, ascertainable loss is an undefined term in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. It can be de minimis as by statute. And I think the example, I believe it was Senator Farioli who used the example of he's paid a certain amount, this $10 for this product, he gets it home, it's recalled, it's not safe, it's recalled because it's not safe to provide to his child. When he takes that back to the store and the store refuses a refund, I would argue that very well could be deemed an ascertainable loss, and that Senator Farioli should have the ability under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act to have some right of action where the Department of Justice would not necessarily take a right of action there, but no child's been injured, and no child, no physical harm has occurred in terms of torts and liability actions and these other actions. He was sold a good that has been vetted and that has been recalled.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
And I want to go back to, I think it was Sean's or I can't remember who said, you know, these notices come out, let's say at noon, as soon as the notice is out, regardless of whether the store had the staffing problem to address the issue, does strict I can't think of any other word for it, but does strict liability occur? So if there is notice, regardless of whether the notice is a reasonable time period or whatever, and something happens, let's say Richard bought his grandson, I can't believe you only spent $10, Senator.
$9.
So let's say the notice is out at noon, and Senator Devlin, because he's such a shopaholic, is there at, you know, 12:05, purchases it, goes home, finds out the product has been recalled. Is it strict liability, essentially, once there's notice, is, you know...
Chair Devlin, Senator Brown, let me preface that.
It may not be the right language.
Let me preface that with, because strict liability is a legal term,
right,
I would prefer not using that.
Okay.
And so my answer to that would be no. You would still have to show the elements of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. So one of the elements of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act for the private right of action is willfulness. It's a defined term in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. It's a new or should have known standard as it's defined.
Okay.
But
And so it's an element that would have to be met when you're talking about getting from the computer where you've received the notice and getting staff to the shelf to remove the product.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. That's very helpful.
Let's go back to your...
Senator Brown, are you concluded?
I'm done. Thank you. Okay. With my cross-examination of this business, Mr. Chair.
Let's go back to your example. There is no...
Chair Devlin, can I get that in writing?
No. Yes. Let's go back to your example. There's no product liability. No one has been injured. I bought the $10, $9, 29 cent thing. I bring it back. They refuse to take it. I decide I'm going to file suit to get my $9.29 back. what attorney in this state do you think would take that case? B, if I was going to go small claims, what would it cost me right now to just simply file the paperwork for a small claims?
Chair Devlin, having not been a private attorney in Oregon, I think there's others in the audience who can better answer that question. But I would
not this audience.
They wouldn't even work that cheap.
but I am willing to venture a guess that probably not many. And I might add really quick that there's a reporting requirement for private rights of action under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act in 646-607, and there's 60 general and specific acts that constitute a violation of 646-608, and the average of those private rights of actions that have been filed under the statute, in whole or in part, because there's nothing exclusive about it, but they average about 100 lawsuits a year.
For all 60?
That's for all those counts in 608 that are reported to the Attorney General pursuant to the statute statewide.
Do you have the results of the litigation also?
Chair Devlin, I don't think in all cases, but I do know that we have the results in some.
Okay. Additional question, Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think we're hopping over the reality out there. It isn't that an attorney would take the case. It's that there are a number of attorneys who'd write the letter. So in the Devlin example, for the $9.29...
I can't get a letter for $9.29.
No, you can't.
You can't get a phone call return, Senator Farioli.
So if your de minimis costs are $200, that's for openers and attorney's fees are on top of that. So, you know, in the Devlin example, what you get is, suppose, you know, perish the thought, Senator Devlin buys on sale. And the employees are instructed not to take a return item that's been sold on sale. Frequently see the sign, you know. And even though it is on a recall list somewhere, posted in the ether, the employee doesn't realize that it's on the recall list. And when Senator Devlin comes in to demand his $9.29 back, the employee says, we're not going to take that back. We'll give you a credit. We're not going to give you a refund. Well, maybe Mr. Devlin doesn't want, Senator Devlin doesn't want a credit. He wants his money back. He has a private right of action. And I suppose that you won't find an attorney who's willing to go to court for $9.29. But I think you will find attorneys who are happily willing to sit down and write a letter to make the demand, and not just for the $9.29, but the de minimis amount mentioned in the assumptive amount mentioned in the bill, which is $200, plus their attorney's fees in the demand letter. So now, you know, the retailer who's horrified because his employee refused to take back a recalled item, which is clearly a policy of the store, now has to hire an attorney to figure out what their liability will be. You know, and he'll, believe me, happily send the $209.29 plus the attorney's fees in order to avoid going to court. It is open season on hapless retailers, potentially. Now, if I describe something that didn't work there, please stop me.
Chair Devlin, Senator Farioli, you're absolutely right. Under those facts, I think that circumstance is very possible. I would respectfully disagree with the open season comment. The attorney's fees may be a couple hundred dollars. The statutory fees may be, or the statutory penalty may be $200. And I suspect, as you ended your sentence as well, that it would end there.
And again, I think all of that goes back to the discussion earlier on deterrence.
Mr. Chairman, if you can parlay $9.29 into a $600, you know, turnaround letter, I mean, I think that is the kind of thing that we're really trying to protect the retailers from.
And Chair Devlin, I apologize. I also didn't get a chance to finish your finish the answer to your original question. I don't know the actual fees right now for small claims, but I believe it's around $50.
Okay. Another question, Mr. Chair. Do any other states have a private right of action attached to this kind of a thing? Specifically, do they have that?
Chair Devlin, Senator Farioli, to respectfully correct my reiterated testimony earlier from the House side, in the five or six pieces of legislation that we've reviewed, we could not find a private right of action. I would note that one of the things that did surprise us is we found in more than one state criminal penalties, jail time for violation of their version of a Children's Product Safety Act.
We know that would have a fist.
Mr. Chair, I anticipated my next question. I don't understand how the Department of Justice can coordinate all of this activity without having additional costs.
Chair Devlin, Senator Farioli, first and foremost, to put on the record, just so it is clear, the activity is very limited. What the bill requires us to do is to assist businesses when they contact us or on our website in helping them provide this information. What the bill requires is that either through a 1-800 number for those who don't have internet access or through the Consumer Product Safety Commission's internet listserv. I'm on that listserv. Anybody can be on that listserv. It's an automatic recall notice email every time that a recall is issued. The bill actually requires the businesses take affirmative steps to receive that information. Directly to your fiscal question, we do this already. We have outreach programs not only for consumers but for businesses as well. We have the Attorney General's hotline, which is staffed with volunteers. Even we as line attorneys are often on the phone with not only consumers but also industry, helping them with in terms of no call's a good example. You know, here's who you need to contact at the FTC to get in touch with the no call list. So this is what we do, and as has been alluded to, this falls into a bucket of everything that the Attorney General does under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. There are many criteria, many guidelines, and lots of priorities that determine what cases are pursued, you know, that determine when an actual investigation is opened. And that won't change. There is still only X amount of work that can be done in 1 year by the Attorney General's Financial Fraud Consumer Protection section as it's set up and funded currently.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
So no other states have this private right of action, but some do actually provide for jail time for violations.
Chair Devlin, Senator Farioli, I have not been able to find another state with a private right of action. I can't say determinately either way, but yes, there are some that include jail time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thank the witness for, I think, excellent testimony. And it wasn't just because he liked the hat.
Final follow-up, and then I have Mr. Craven would like to come and address this for a couple of minutes, and then we'll close. I'm trying to think of this in the sense of back at the time I was on Ways and Means when we actually had to cut the general funds. It was during the...
You mean 91 to 2005?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, just to clarify.
But we also simultaneously had to try to keep the court system open because both on the criminal and the civil side, we had particular problems trying to keep significant cases moving. Dissolution cases that are relatively serious cases and child custody cases taking, in many cases, I think, a year to 18 months to actually even come up. Probably product liability cases taking similar times. Why would I want to further clutter the courts
with something that could result in even the $500.
Chair Devlin, I'd have to respectfully disagree with the assumption that it will clutter the courts, even with the testimony that has happened previously. And again, I would go back to the reference of the fact that there are 60 specific and independent acts in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act that constitute violations. As was alluded to earlier, they are not all based on fraud. And we just don't believe that this private right of action will drastically increase folks going to court who would not have already been going to court.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Scholl, not to continue this cross-examination, but that might prove that case, but it probably proves my other case, too, that it's not a particularly effective remedy.
Chair Devlin, again, we look at this as deterrence.
Yeah.
And so in terms of why the Department of Justice supports a private right of action in these instances where it's placed in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, again, it's not the number of suits. It's that one party who should have the same right that the state of Oregon has under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. And if you remove that and the Department of Justice or another state agency doesn't take any action, they're simply left without redress.
Thank you very much. Mr. Craven, come up. And I think there's some other activities members are trying to get to.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven, American Electronics Association. We're not here with a specific position on the bill, though I have had a few worries from folks like eBay to figure out whether they're a seller or the people who sell through eBay are a seller, but I don't want to cloud the issue on that. Just as a quick observation, I think in looking at 10 years or so, looking at bills introduced that are in this field of general consumer protection or whatever, I think we sometimes, it's either laziness or intent, and it's not impugning anybody. We tend to say, here's a bill that has something to do with consumers, and we just toss it into the UTPA as the remedy. I mean, you look at this one, this would represent little dot III, the 60-some-odd that Mr. Scholl alluded to. And in the interim of 06, when we worked on that really big identity theft bill that you all passed last session, we had the luxury of an entire year of a task force. And as the initial draft just tossed everything into the UTPA as little dot II whatever. And in working through and having the time to work through that, we said, you know, that isn't the best remedy for what we're trying to do. And we actually created that into the DCBS, created them as the agency, created a unique set of enforcements and remedies to meet what we were trying to do. So it's just an observation. This is a fascinating hearing. But I think sometimes, and I don't know if it's legislative counsel or legislators or whom, but somebody says, here's a problem, we draft a bill, and we just add it to that long, growing list, and then the whole issue of private right of action and appropriate remedy always blows up. So it's just an observation and maybe a recommendation for the future that we think of remedies meeting what we're trying to do rather than just throwing it into that growing list. So, just unsolicited advice.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Perioli.
Yeah, just in an attempt to drag Mr. Cravens into this quagmire. There's a whole number of CPUs that are...
CPUs?
Computers.
Okay, thank you.
That are ideally targeted and marketed toward children, many under 12. Xbox, Game Boy, blah, blah, blah. Do any of those CPUs contain hazardous materials? Or do they all contain hazardous materials?
Well, rare, Mr. Chair,
rare earth, mercury.
Every electronic device that exists on this planet is made with chemicals, some of which, if misused or exposed in great exposures could be defined as hazardous. Lead is one, though lead is rapidly coming out of products. Cadmium, mercury, yes. The answer is many products that almost everything that is electronic has something in it that a federal government at some point has defined as hazardous.
But not necessarily.
It doesn't mean it is hazardous to the user or provides any kind of exposure pathway, but the chemicals themselves, yes.
And, Mr. Chairman, I just want to point out, they wouldn't all fall under any category in this bill unless they were particularly marketed to children. And I know that if I go to Toys R Us or KB or the Apple Store, there's a whole bunch of these products that, in fact, are marketed to children. So I would just suggest to you that if you were sleeping soundly and comfortable, you know, prior to this hearing, that I hope that this line of questioning has raised at least the potentiality that those products, in fact, are at the heart of the subject of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That's why I'm here.
Yep. Well, seeing no one else wishes to testify at this point, I will close the public hearing, and we will be back to this bill probably sometime next week, although I may be in contact with one or more of you.
Good luck, Richard.
So you're adjourned.
There's mine.
So, Chair, you're adjourned.
Yeah. Got it.
You're adjourned.